Donald Hassig with Loving the Earth Pollution Free Revolution. This is a Cancer Action Network production. Joining us today is Olga Nadenko. She is a PhD. She is a scientist with the Environmental Working Group. The Environmental Working Group is doing a lot of good work on dioxins. Good morning, Olga.
Good morning.
Tell us about your background. The listeners are, I'm sure, interested in knowing who it is that they're listening to, and I think that's a very big, important part of interviews. So give us, you know, say 2 or 3 minutes of your background.
Absolutely. Well, my current position is a scientist with Environmental Working Group, a nonprofit public health research and advocacy organization based in Washington, D.C. Before coming to WG, I had I spent a number of years in academia. I got my PhD from UCLA more than 10 years ago. I did research looking at various processes that impact people's health. And from that research experience, my interests really developed specifically in the area of chemical toxicity, which is trying to understand how toxic chemicals, wherever they may be coming from, impact people's health. Right now, I do research, for example, on questions of drinking water contaminants, on pollutants that may be found in the air, in consumer products, or in the soil. So whatever is the route of exposure, if it poses a risk to human health, that would be a chemical of concern for us, and my research would address that.
Okay. There's been some good body burden science data provided to the American public by EWG. Can you expand upon that, you know, that work that the EWG has been doing?
Absolutely. Well, for a long time, researchers and the general public thought that chemical pollutants in the soil, in the air, they are outside. But what science has been pointing us to is that, in fact, those pollutants outside, they do get into our bodies. We inhale air pollutants with air, we ingest them with water or with food. So once science accepted the pollutants outside do get into our bodies, that was the first big revolution, we could say, in toxicology. But the second change came when we realized that even the developing fetus, so the future baby while it is growing in the body of its mother, even that fetus is exposed to chemical pollutants. Again, scientists for decades thought that the placenta, the surrounding body of the mother, protects the fetus and chemicals outside don't impact it. But what EWG research has shown is that this is indeed not the case. When EWG scientists tested the umbilical cord blood, this is, of course, the direct connection between the mother's and the child's body, we found hundreds of toxic industrial chemicals in the umbilical cord blood. So whatever the mother is exposed to, the child is exposed to, even before being born, and we know that those chemicals, especially during the early, most vulnerable period of growth, will have all kinds of future toxic effects later in life, you know, chronic diseases, whether it's neurological impairment or increased risk of cancer or other chronic diseases.
Yeah, I just want to say right now, honor to the EWG, the Environmental Working Group, for doing this body burden research and then getting the knowledge out to the general public. This is such an important part of, you know, using scientific knowledge to prevent disease. This matter of once the research has been done, getting it to the general public so that there can be advocacy that is supported by the knowledge, and also so people can actually change their behaviors to make use of the knowledge to reduce their risk. Let's start a little more, you know, narrowly focusing this interview now. Let's start talking about dioxin. EWG has been focusing on body burden, and dioxin is one of the groups of chemicals that is a significant part of body burden. Tell us about how EWG has come into this realm of participating in the US EPA's dioxin science advisory. Let me start off again. The US EPA has a science advisory board, and one of those boards, and one of the parts of that is the dioxin review panel. So tell us about how EWDG decided to begin participating in the dioxin review panel meetings, and then we'll get into the most recent meeting that took place and how your group interacted with the rest of those at that meeting.
Absolutely. Well, as the listeners may already know, dioxin has been in the news for decades now. This is, of course, a toxic chemical that forms during combustion when people burn plastics, so it forms in incinerators, it forms during chlorinated paper bleaching, and it also is a chemical that has been associated with the Seveso accident. So we know that it's a cancer-causing chemical that adversely affects pretty much every system in the body. And in the United States, Environmental Protection Agency has been in the process of trying to set up a safety level for dioxin for going on third decade now, starting in 1980s. And even up to now, they have not been able to set such a standard. And we will get later on into details as to why. All kinds of political opposition from the outside and within the government. But what has changed, coming specifically to your question, is that under the current administration, and specifically the present administrator of EPA, Lisa Jackson, there has been once again a renewed energy at the EPA trying to finally tackle the dioxin problem. And that has been expressed in Dioxin Science Plan presented by Lisa Jackson in 2009, the steps that the agency decided to take to finally do a very thorough science-based risk assessment for dioxin toxicity, say how little can be tolerated, if at all, maybe none at all, and provide the guidance to the states so that the states, using those numbers calculated by EPA, can lead their own cleanup efforts. So, in Environmental Working Group came to this question in the context of our full support for EPA's Dioxin Science Plan that had various very important milestones. And what we realized is that for the same reasons as were there 10 years ago, same today, there are still very powerful interests opposing EPA's science plan on dioxin, and we decided that it was essential for us to come out and to support the work of EPA, not for any reason, but very specifically because this work was essential for protecting the health of all Americans.
Okay, now let's get into the most recent meeting. The most let let's in fact no let's back up for just a minute, and I will give a little bit of background on how, this process has been going. I started looking at a document that was originated in April. Well, the process of creating this dioxin reassessment document that I've been familiarizing myself with, that began in April of 1991. US EPA started to create a draft dioxin reassessment, and it's on health and exposure. It deals very well with how much exposure is taking place, and then it deals with a little less well with the health effects of exposure to dioxins, not dioxin, but the plural, the 200-plus congeners of dioxin, and then furans and dioxin like PCBs as well. And this has been a long time. It'll be 20 years this, in April of 2011. I long ago made a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request of the EPA's National Center for Environmental Assessment, which is the lead on the dioxin reassessment. I made a request to have all the contact that had occurred between the Science Advisory Board on this whole matter of dioxin and disease and the creation of this final document of the reassessment. And at that time, that was, well, it's probably 5, 6 years ago. At that time, the request was denied, and I was provided with no information at all. But there is change in taking place because I made the request again this past year in 2010 and received 15 big folders of information about what EPA has been doing in the context of this U.S. EPA Science Advisory Board Dioxin Review Panel. This is very central in the process whereby EPA will go about creating this final dioxin reassessment, which is about how much disease is caused by dioxin exposure, and in particular, how much cancer is caused by dioxin exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you say, EPA has become more active. During this past summer, the summer of 2010, there were two meetings of the Science Advisory Board, Dioxin Review Panel. And then in October, there was another meeting of the Dioxin Review Panel. You participated in that meeting as a representative of the EWG, and I participated in that meeting to a lesser extent. I did not travel to Washington as you did, but it's good that there is this opportunity for smaller groups to participate via this telephone connection, which works so well. And so as a representative of Cancer Action in New York, I represented, you know, and spoke during the public comment to the members of the Science Advisory Board Dioxin Review Panel. So you tell us, tell the listeners what you brought to the table, so to speak, for this U.S. EPA Science Advisory Board Dioxin Review Panel that took place in October of 2010.
Absolutely. First of all, just to mention that this, as we already referred to, there is indeed a very positive change at EPA, but unfortunately there is still the same set of players who opposed to EPA's work 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and they still oppose now. Not surprisingly, the opposing sides are some of the polluting industries who will actually have to face up to their act and do some cleanup. But EWG came to this question strictly from the science perspective. We did a very thorough review of the EPA's assessment. We found it to be very much consistent with the latest science and incorporating the methods for risk assessment that, of course, are always being debated, but there is always the, you know, what provides most public health protection. And then we decided to do our own estimates of what the current level of dioxins mean for public health. And what we found is several key points. First of all, even though dioxin levels are going down across the country because of some cleanup steps taken by the EPA, so that's a very good thing. But even at the current levels, dioxins still pose risk to Americans. And the Environmental Working Group participated at both meetings of the Science Advisory Board, where we presented our analysis demonstrating how dioxin remains a cancer risk. And we also found that the most intense, in terms of concentration, most intense dioxin exposure actually happens for young babies, because that's when the child is primarily breastfed and dioxin is transferred with breast milk from the body of the mother to the body of the child, again demonstrating that indeed this is still a public health concern. So we were able to share this research and our analysis with the members of the Science Advisory Board in summer and in October.
Can I stop you for just a minute? How would the American public read, you know, just actually be able to sit down and read the reports in this research that you shared, you know, this analysis of the public health effect of the current levels of dioxin exposure? How would the public access that information?
Absolutely. People can come to Environmental Working Group website, and it's very easy to find. It's www.ewg.org and then /dioxin and /home. So that's our dioxin page on our website, where we summarize the story of dioxin, the one that took place over decades, as well as what the latest science tells about health risks of the current dioxin exposures.
Well, your point about the current levels of exposure continuing to be a public health problem due to the fact of the relatively high exposure that the developing fetus receives from the mother's body burden. That is very much, that is very powerful what you have, you know, focused on. And I'm hoping that the listeners will pick up on that and be willing to take the time to read this assessment, this risk assessment that EWG has put together with the focus on the fetal exposures to the mother's body burden of dioxin, and then make up their own minds about how much work needs to be done on further reducing the exposure that Americans have to dioxins and dioxin-like compounds.
And
so tell us about...
Can I follow up just on the point you made just now? And that is, of course, whenever public is informed about the risks of toxic chemicals in their food or in consumer products, and that's, of course, my job, and I have to do it every day is to prepare this kind of public communications. Generally, immediate question is, what should I do?
Okay.
What are the choices that I have? And as happens to be in the case of dioxin, because we know so much about routes of exposure, and steps can be quite easy. Dioxin is a fat-soluble toxic chemical, so certainly people who avoid animal fat, that's the first step to decrease the exposure. And even for people who still continue eating meat, which is, of course, the majority of Americans, avoiding the fat part of the meat is a way to minimize dioxin consumption. And then specifically on the issue of breastfeeding, breast milk is, of course, the best source of nutrition for the child. And under no circumstance this concern about dioxin should be a reason to stop breastfeeding. But what it means is that we as a society need to keep asking ourselves really hard questions. How can we decrease this amount of dioxin in the environment? If it's getting into breast milk, the answer is not don't breastfeed. The answer is we need to get to the source, tackle dioxin there, and then dioxin contamination overall and in breast milk will go down.
Right. Well said. Very, very, very well said. Okay, tell us how it went when you brought that message to Washington in October of 2010.
Absolutely. It is really a very good thing that EPA, in its various decision-making processes, has this opportunity for public comment so that stakeholders affected by any decision of EPA can bring their message to the agencies. It can be a forum where some of these really hard science questions are being debated. The interesting aspect of this meeting, but similar for many other meetings, is that, of course, the parties who come to these events generally represent two communities. One is the community that caused the pollution initially. It could be military operations, it could be disposal industries, it could be industries where dioxin is a byproduct. But so they are the polluters, so to speak, who do not want to see dioxin regulated because that means they will have to do some cleanup. But it's also a forum where affected communities can come, communities whose soil has been polluted by dioxin, people who are unable to now catch fish in the streams where they and their ancestors caught fish for many generations because that stream has been polluted with dioxins and related chemical pollutants. So Environmental Working Group was part of a very strong presence of the environmental community and polluted affected communities. Who brought the message to the EPA and to the decision makers that setting up of dioxin standards was absolutely essential for them. And another interesting player in this process is actually state cleanup agencies. They need EPA to finish its job so that the states can then go ahead and guide their own cleanup efforts. And so long as the work at EPA is stalled, as it has been for a long time now, it's really hard for people on the ground in locations all across the country to, it's very hard to figure out what exactly they should be doing, what is safe, what is not safe. And all of those interests brought up their message to this decision-making panel and presented it to the panel in this open forum.
How was it, you know, what was the ratio? Was there more of the polluters or more of the polluted?
That's a good question. It really varies from process to process. I think in this one it was pretty well matched because there are so many communities affected adversely by dioxin contamination that I could not really give you specific 50-50 or 60-40 split, but it was just a sort of, it was a balanced number, and they were
Balance.
going one after another. There would be a representative from the polluting industry and a representative from the affected community, and it was an amazingly long process. In the two meetings, the number of public comments ran to 30 or 40 or maybe more than that, which is pretty rare, which shows what a strong interest the general public has in this issue.
Okay, is there any particular comments that you listened to during that meeting that you would like to share at this time, or would you rather move on to where you see this going now that the meeting has taken place? Or, I would be interested in, see, I made my presentation. I was actually lucky enough to be the number one presenter during that October meeting, and then I got off it. I get frustrated when I hear those chemical company people just tearing the science apart and twisting it and abusing science to the extent that it is not even science anymore. It's just their words to try to avoid, like you say, this responsibility to do a sufficient cleanup. It gets so frustrating to me. I don't want to listen to it, and so I just
Absolutely.
avoid it. It was very strong of you to be able to sit there and listen to both sides of this. And honor to
And
Olga
maybe just to
Nadeko.
pause you on that, and I would like to recommend to your listeners a really excellent book by Dr. David Michaels, who is the current director of OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And David Michaels used to be a professor at George Washington University School of Public Health, and his book is called Doubt is the Product, the one that I would strongly recommend for anybody interested in the issues of pollution. And what Dr. Michael documents in this book is that this approach of the polluters, no matter what, whether we are talking about chemical pollution, radioactive pollution, or tobacco for that matter, has been to stall the process by trying to create doubt where doubt does not exist. The science on dioxin has been settled a long time back, and as scientists are continuing to do research on this, what they are finding is that dioxin is toxic at lower and lower doses than was previously thought. I mean, it's one of the best studied chemicals in my specialty, toxicology. So to say that we don't understand how toxic it is, or to say that maybe it's not that bad, as some industry representatives were saying at the meeting, that's just blatantly not true. But this particular playbook approach, create doubt, is the one that pretty much sets cogs in the wheels of the federal process that tries to protect public health. And if there is an appearance of doubt, then of course the process is delayed. And the listeners should go find that book, and it will demonstrate that what the industry is doing, it's not new, it was not invented yesterday, it's a standard technique that they use.
Okay. Certainly will look at that book myself. Sounds like a good potential interview for the future. Okay, where do we go from here? Let's see. You've given us some, you know,
That's a
you've
great
t tell us.
question. No, the decision is probably at least partly political based on what else is happening in Washington, what is happening in Congress. Currently, there are two dioxin documents, so to speak, big projects that EPA is working on. One is this dioxin safety standard that was reviewed by Science Advisory Board. The other is a remediation standard for dioxin, and that's part of the Superfund program. And that remediation standard for dioxin has been completed sometime in summer 2010, and it's now under review in the Office of Management and Budget. An environmental working group met with OMB last week, in fact, a week ago on January 31st, where we expressed our strong support for EPA's work and our support for the recommendations that EPA made. So, again, what does it mean that it's a political process? We don't really know going forward what what the current administration will decide to do on dioxin, that's still up in the air. And with changing political climate, that's really hard to predict. But if we look at it just from the agency side, there is no doubt that EPA has really good scientists and that they're trying to do a good job and finally finish this process, which is approaching 30 years of delays. We, on our part, will continue doing all we can to help that process come to a completion. In the meanwhile, unfortunately, we are all waiting for these various steps to come to fruition until there will be next opportunity for public comment.
Yep. The way I have to say that you are more, and that is fine. It is your, you know, your experience and your position and just your life that you are speaking from. I have to say that you, though, you are more kind of positive toward EPA than what our group is. Our group mm-hmm. has taken the, you know, the role, if that's a way of expressing it, and the position that the EPA is too much controlled by the corporations, and that even though they have done a lot of work, it may well be the case that the lot of work they're doing is pure and simple obfuscation and really just designed to create the illusion that something is being done rather than actually do anything. And so we have been, you know, kind of attacking EPA, and they have not liked it at all. And we simply, in our attack, it wasn't a nasty attack, it was just this strong kind of requesting of on-the-record discussions with scientists at EPA about dioxin exposure cancer outcome, especially in particular to the population levels of cancer outcome that one would expect with current levels of dioxin exposure. And we heard such a different story than what the dioxin reassessment tells from Dwayne Winters, who is with the Dioxin Policy Project. We decided that we wanted to talk to some other scientists. And then we set about trying to attain an interview with Dr. Peter Preuss when he was the director of the National Center for Environmental Assessment, which is the lead on the dioxin reassessment. And he started off with me before we even got on the record. It was before we reached the stage of, you know, wanting to have him on the record. He said to me that the calculations that one could do using the numbers from the USCPA dioxin reassessment, from this voluminous body of information, which is, it covers many diseases, but there is a part three, and it is a risk assessment, a quantitative risk assessment. They call it a risk characterization, but it's quantitative. It's very quantitative. And there is a cancer slope factor set forth in that particular part of the dioxin reassessment, and in the purpose in producing the cancer slope factor is to be able to calculate population level cancer outcome at current levels of exposure. But he said to me when I brought that part of this whole issue up, he said, childlike arithmetic. He had such a bad attitude as far as wreaking havoc with the EPA's own years of work in creating this quantitative risk assessment. Because, see, this is what people want to know. People want to know, okay, there's the chemical, but how much of it is here in our bodies and in the environment? And how much disease does that quantity cause? Because that's the only way you can really get down to it and say, okay, this is a really serious matter, and we're going to do something that's hard to do, like tell people about contaminants in the food supply and changing their diet and cleaning up, spending billions of dollars on cleanup, probably. It'll be a lot of work for all of us, and the chemical companies aren't going to like to do it. It'll mean putting a lot of pressure on them, and the politicians aren't going to like it because they're going to be putting pressure on people that have been supporting their campaigns. And it's all very painful, and yet it's necessary to have a healthy environment and public. So we've been trying to get these interviews now for about a year now with the EPA people. His name is Abdel Kadri. He was a former head of it's called the Integrated Risk Information System, that actually does its own work on risk assessment for toxic chemicals, and they do have some information on dioxin, and they understand this matter of the cancer slope factor and population levels of cancer outcome. We've been seeking those interviews now, first with Dr. Kadri, and now he's moved on, and this Dr. Vincent Cagliano, that was formerly with the IARC Monograph Program, he now is at the head of the Integrated Risk Information System at EPA, and we are just totally unsuccessful in just getting to talk on the record substantively about the science of quantitative risk assessment for dioxins and dioxin-like compounds. And that has been very frustrating for us. So we don't like EPA very much. You know, our organization, we think of EPA as the lap dogs of the corporate overlords. And you know, I have to say it, you know, you guys are doing great work. Honor to EWG. But, I have to say, you know, we differ greatly upon how much honor we're willing to give, you know, the US EPA.
Absolutely. Well, I think what you're highlighting are definitely some of the important concerns that many people in the environmental community and the WG have felt, and that is that the mission of the EPA is, you know, varied, and very often the regulations they make have to take things like costs into consideration. In other words, they would not be just about public health. They would be about public health, but also licensing pesticides to get in the market. No, not quite promoting pesticides, but allowing toxic stuff to be used in our fields. And, you know, I'm not really sort of going to be able to discuss everything about EPA. I think what we all fully understand is that very often the decisions of the agency are based on the current political situation. And you've been in this field for much longer than me, and I'm sure you have a really wide experience looking at some good and some not so good decisions that the agency has made, and you will have seen them. What I feel is that right now the agency has momentum. That's very clear in various issues I look at. I do a lot of drinking water work, and there's clearly really, really positive momentum on those issues as we have not seen before. There's clearly momentum to address the issue of chemicals in general. Now, there have been many proposals on the table, many of which EWG supports, about reforming Toxic Substances Control Act, and, you know, we might feel that the agency in the past had given reasons for criticism, but they are the ones who are doing this work now. So, you know, it's kind of like the moving train. This is a train that's going now. But I do share your opinions, and certainly, you know, David Michael's book I mentioned earlier, which find that very often the movement has not been in the positive direction, or there was no movement at all, or there was actual backtracking. All people who worked on the issue of environmental policy have seen it. But all I can say is, as far as the Dioxin Science Plan is concerned, if that were put into practice, that would be a giant step forward for public health.
Yeah, I would like to see the finalization of the dioxin reassessment in a more than timely manner. It's gone on so long, this 20 years of creating it. I would like to see them finalize it quickly, you know, rather than just timely. And see, this is where it all falls apart, because I'm looking at, you know, I just called Tom Armitage with the U.S. EPA Science Advisory Board Dioxin Review Panel just this morning and asked him how to get a look at the minutes for the meetings that took place in the summer and the meeting that took place in October. Because I could find the comments of the various commenters, but as far as the minutes of the actual meeting, I could not access the minutes from those summer meetings. And he said he would send me the URL for the summer meetings minutes, but he pointed out that they continue to, you know, work on getting the minutes from that October meeting on the website. And I counted the months up. It's been, you know, it's November, December, January, February. It's working on 4 months since that meeting took place. And the minutes, you know, something that happened right there and was done right then, those minutes still aren't available to any members of the public. And people that didn't attend the meeting, you know, it's, you know, their doubt is in their minds as to what took place there as far as what the panel members had to say, what the dioxin review panel members, how they were, you know, responding to this knowledge. So I feel, you know, I just feel frustrated as can be that we're talking about no minutes for a meeting that's about a draft report. See, the panel is going to produce a draft report about this draft report that EPA produced. And then that's all going to filter down to be dealing with a draft dioxin reassessment. We're talking about three draft documents now. And I know they're doing something, but it seems like they're obfuscating to me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally share your frustration. And again, as anybody who has been in the policy field for a while, it's very hard not to feel frustrated. As soon as you find out the best way to help speed up the process and get it done, please tell me because I'd love to know what the trick is going to be. I don't know it as of now.
Well, we think a revolution would do the trick.
That's an interesting opinion.
Yep, and let's not talk a whole lot about that because it's not very scientific. You know, it's just what people do when they just decide that things are never going to get fixed, and it's bad enough that it's worth taking any kind of risk, and just since the risks are so bad already, that you just do what you have to do, and hopefully, I would much prefer that it did not come to that, because there are better ways of solving differences among people. It truly, the thing that would make the hugest difference is if people would just get out and start talking about it. If people would just have a out in the
Absolutely.
open discussion between the tribe that says, we did right, we had no bad intentions, we used these chemicals for the best of everybody, and it just didn't turn out quite as well as we hoped, and we're going to do the right thing now. I would like to see a totally out in the open conversation between all the people in that tribe and all the people that say, you didn't care. You kept doing this way too long. There's been so many warnings, like Silent Spring way back in the 1960s, and then Rachel Carson dying of breast cancer, and then girls getting breast cancer in New York State, and just California girls getting breast cancer, and it being so much worse in so many ways than the way it used to be. That conversation needs to take place, and it's not taking place. It's
Absolutely,
not taking place. Not taking place.
I certainly could not agree with you more that you know the most powerful tool we all have is to really raise people's awareness so that you know they don't make assumptions that if something is on the market is safe or the government is taking care of it. And in fact, you know, our environmental health is affected by the millions of smallest decisions which people take every day, you know, how they dispose of their trash, for example, that kind of decision. And other than starting a very robust conversation, starting it from early age, and making sure it goes for all sectors of society, that's really, you know, the ultimate solution, in terms of addressing environmental problems of our society.
Yeah, I think people need to really change. It is true that the individual Americans need to change in their hearts to get this right. You know, the truth of it is, if all the Americans, you know, or like, you know, many of them, if large numbers of Americans had decided that the environment was very important, that their health was more important than money, that they were going to talk about these problems regardless of the social and financial impacts upon their individual lives. If they would do that, this would come to a resolution in a nonviolent, totally, you know, just people talking kind of way. So I guess one of the big projects that we need to endeavor to persevere in would be this thing of changing people's hearts. Because truly, when I see the history of what's happened, and then I see Republicans that were certainly involved with, to say the very least, with the Bush administrations and the Reagan administration that brought about the harm that we're talking about right now, that held off all the use of science that could have been protecting public health during that time when dioxin exposures were at their highest, and are continuing to hold it off now as they've gone down some, but not nearly far enough. And then to think about all the other pops that have. This is where we're going with this. We see these other chemicals that are similar to dioxins, and not just similar to the extent that they're called dioxin-like, but similar to the extent that they're endocrine disruptors and that they are carcinogenic, many of them. The PBDEs, these brominated flame retardants, the old pesticides like DDT, the toxaphene, the Marex, the hexachlorobenzene, the hexachlorocyclohexane, these chemicals that have been around the environment for a long time, that persist, that are contaminants of animal fat. I was talking to a scientist with US FDA, his name is Dr. Paul South, about this very issue, and he said to me, if we listed, see, we were asking him to label the animal food, animal like meat and chicken and fish and beef and ice cream and cheese, to label those foods so that people knew the chemicals that they're putting into their body and creating a body burden of. And he said if we labeled it, there wouldn't be room on the package for all the names of all the chemicals. And so if they cannot come to a agreement, you know, and just do something on dioxin, I don't see how it's, they should just stop on dioxin and say, well, the fact of the matter is there's so many other chemicals involved here. It's so obvious that there is a risk from eating animal fat that we're going to just do the right thing as far as, you know, what the people need to do right now. We're going to post warnings in the supermarkets that all the animal fat in the world is contaminated with POPs that are very similar to dioxin in this matter of causing disease by endocrine disruption and in utero impacts on the unborn, and this promotion of carcinogenesis in the separately existing organism, you know, in the life after birth. There are just so many aspects of this that if you just stopped, thought about it for a minute, said there are so many of these chemicals in our food, it's crazy to just unknowingly consume them. The only way there's anything legitimate about public health and science, use of science at all in our country, is to warn the public about this. It seems like that would be a simple way of just getting a long ways with this and doing the right thing, really.
Absolutely. Well, I think you identified several important steps for all of us to take. No, to take as individuals, and I think what you emphasized is the importance of political involvement. You know, as you can tell by my accent, is I was not born in this country, and as many immigrants to the United States, I feel that, you know, the kind of opportunities for public involvement that are available here, that are not available for many of us in our home countries, it would be great if people took more advantage of it. You know, to come back to the dioxin review, you know, this was a publicly open meeting. Anybody could write, anybody could call in. If they were in Washington or close by, they could walk in and make their opinion known. This was not an option in my home country. I was born in Soviet Union. There was no public consultation process there. But now the next step is we have this in place. It's essential that people take advantage of it and make their opinion known. So I think that's really a great message to leave our listeners with, is that it's, yeah, we have those options, but if we don't exercise them, we might as well not have them. So it's really important that people go and make those calls, write those letters, show up, literally, you know, show up.
That is the very essence of the matter. It's numbers. If numbers of people would use what you and I have been using, this matter of access to the process and speaking, just talking, putting words out there for people to hear them, if great numbers of people would do that, this would be all so very, very different.
Yeah.
You know, it would be solved. We would not be talking about dioxins, you know, nearly so much. There will be great progress made because it's simple. Like you say, clean up, and like we're saying, tell people about how to avoid the exposure. This could be moving in the right direction, you know, fast, if large numbers of people were out there bringing it before the people that hold the power, because then it would all be different. So let's wrap it up with that. It's been great talking to you. You've convinced me. I was well aware of the fact from speaking with you previously that you were a player, you know, a really important mind in dealing with this matter, and that EWG certainly was as an organization. But this interview has awakened a greater honoring of you and your organization, especially when you said that about coming up with your own assessment of the current levels of exposure and focusing on the exposures of the unborn and the newborn. That was fantastic, you know, and I'm going to read what you guys have put together on that and start really making use of it in all the work that we do.
Absolutely. Well, I am very glad that I had a chance to speak with you and, of course, to communicate with all of your listeners out there. We need this public attention to these questions, and I look forward to the great work that you and your group are doing and, of course, all your numerous supporters out there in the community. So thank you for the great work you do.
Well, thank you, Olga, and I hope you have a great day to follow up on this great interview.
Great. We'll talk soon. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye. This has been Loving the Earth, Pollution-Free Revolution. We're talking about a very important matter of public health, this whole issue of dioxins and politics and government and the public, and what the kernel here that people need to come away with is get involved at all levels of government, the local level, the county level, the town level, and then the state level and the national level. Do as much as you can to bring a great change now. We've come to see that our environment and our bodies are poisoned by toxic chemicals. The time is now to create an environmental revolution. This has been Loving the Earth Pollution Free Revolution. Have a great day. Bye.